or very young, but we think it's really important to look at this together. So the last 3 weeks we looked at the first three servant songs. Now these are prophecies, that stuff that was said by God to a man named Isaiah, and they really point forward to Jesus, but they're written 700 years before Jesus was born. So it's like a foreshadow, a foretaste of what Jesus is going to be like and what he's going to do. So if you like, they're like bridge pieces or linking pieces between the Old and the New Testament. So this morning, we're going to link these two things together, and we're going to give some background so that we can see where we're coming from, and then we're going to come all the way into the present moment, if you like, on Palm Sunday and see how all that fits together and why Isaiah's prophecy in his chapters 52 and 53 is so key and so important to this. We're going to watch a video which is going to work. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. And this really sets the whole thing up. So this is the very beginning of the story and why and how things went a little bit wrong. In the beginning, people and God were together living in perfect community. So we might say that this screen is God. It's absolutely perfect, spotless, white, holy, absolutely Nothing wrong with that at all. And here's people over on this side. So we've heard there that Adam and Eve messed it up a bit. They disobeyed God. And what happened was there's a separation. God sent them away from the Garden of Eden. Now, before he did this, he made them clothes made out of animal skins. And this is really key, because if you're going to make somebody clothes made out of animal skins, what happens to the animal to whom the skin belonged? Yeah, it's dead. Okay? So God showed Adam and Eve that he could cover up what they'd done, but there was a cost. Something had to die. Does that make sense to you? So that's the premise of where we're going. So that opens up a wee gap, quite a big gap really, between people and God. And so God's people get this whole system of sacrifice going on. They understood that Adam and Eve, sin got covered up because something died. And so they knew that if they brought things to God, something that was precious to them, and they'd done something sinful, and they sacrificed a thing that was precious to them, then they could be with God again. There was no barrier, no gap between them. This gap's a wee bit big. However, because people were sinful, they weren't able to stay connected with God. So even though they'd sacrificed, the next time they sinned, the next time they did something wrong, that was broken again. There was still a gap between God and humanity. So they would do it again. They would do something wrong. There were particular rules that they had to follow. Depending on what you did, you sacrificed certain things. But then guess what would happen? They would sin again, and the sacrifice would be rubbed out, if you like. So they would think, okay, we'll try really, really hard this time. We'll do it really well. We'll try really, really hard to be perfect and to do everything that God wants us to do. And by the way, there's not many religions at all that don't think there's something wrong with humanity. People are trying to do better, trying to live perfect, trying to get it right all the time. But we can't do it. When Adam and Eve ate that fruit in the Garden of Eden, the whole course of our history got changed. We veer towards wrong choices and bad decisions. And all the time, these sacrifices are getting voided, if you like, because people remain sinful and they couldn't be perfect. Now, God wasn't happy with this situation. He wanted a permanent solution, not something that would keep on getting broken all of the time. And so he begins to send messages, signposts, clues in the Old Testament to God's people, messages that were read out to them that pointed towards a hope and a future, that pointed towards somebody special who was going to come and be a permanent solution for the problem of them being separated from God by the bad things that they did. And today's passage is one of those clues or signposts. So it's written 700 years before Jesus, but it's absolutely about Jesus. And we're going to dig into that this morning and see why and how it's about Jesus. And Jake's going to help us with this. So you might want to turn in your Bibles to the end of Isaiah 52, starting at verse 13. And we're going to do this in wee sections this morning. And Jake's going to come and read us this very first section.
See, my servant will act wisely. He will be raised and lifted up, entirely exalted, just as there were many who ruffled at him. His appearance was so disfigured beyond of that of any man, and his form marred beyond human likeness. So he will sprinkle many nations, and kings will shut their mouths because of him. For they were not told, they will see, and what they have not heard, they will understand.
Great. So you can sit down, Jake. The important part that I just want to pull out for us from these verses is this thing about sprinkling. It says, see, he will sprinkle many nations. Now, as I say, God's people had this whole system of sacrificing animals, and they did it in a particular way. And quite often, the priest would sprinkle blood or would sprinkle water or would sprinkle oil on something. And what it meant was that thing was then fit to be able to be in the presence of God. So that's a really important thing that we think about, that the priest would sprinkle something, then it was fit to be in God's presence. So actually, if Jesus is going to do this sprinkling, whatever that looks like, to God's people, to many nations, then actually that's going to make them fit to be in God's presence. So that's a big clue for us. That's a really important part of the puzzle, that Jesus is going to do something that enables us to stand in God's presence and for that to be okay. Jake, will you come and read us the second bit?
Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we could desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering, like one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised, and we esteemed him not.
So God sends Jesus as a baby. We know this from the Christmas story, the most well-known story. And actually, this passage is really familiar to us as well. If you've been around the church world for a while, you've probably heard these verses before. Now, it seems like there's some hope at the beginning, a tender shoot and a root out of dry ground. That sounds pretty cool, doesn't it? And actually, Jesus grew up to be someone pretty special. He did these amazing things, and he attracted loads of followers, and followers, people started to put their faith and their hope and their dreams in this guy. Surely this is the Messiah that all those Old Testament things pointed towards, the person that they've been waiting for. But then actually it changed, doesn't it? He was despised and rejected by men. Suddenly things began to get difficult. Jesus was saying difficult things. He was bucking the system. He was going against the norm. And so people turned against him. And as we know, at the end of this story, Jesus dies on the cross. But we'll get to that in a wee minute. So what I'd love you to do is turn to the people around about you. And if you send one person from each of your group, I've got a wee work. And what we would love you to do is to make a list of stuff that attracted people to Jesus, stuff that he did that was cool and that people liked, then stuff that made people turn away from Jesus, what made them not want to follow him anymore, and then a list of people who liked Jesus and a list of people who didn't like Jesus. Okay? So just in the wee groups that you're with, I've got sheets here and some pens. Yeah. Well, he was a great storyteller, wasn't he? So people loved to hear his stories. He healed people. That was pretty attractive. And then there were the food miracles, which we know were particularly popular. So there's lots and lots of other things as well, and you'll have other ideas as well. Things that really turned people away from Jesus, which is maybe just this kind of one idea that encompasses lots of things. It's this challenging teaching, isn't it? Quite often some of the Gospels will say, and the people were so challenged by this that many of them turned away, or many decided not to follow him anymore, because some of the stuff he says seems a bit countercultural. It's like life is turned upside down. Some of it seems frankly bonkers to the people that are listening. It doesn't always seem to make a whole lot of sense, usually because it challenges people's ideas and expectations and makes them realize they need to do something, they need to respond in a fairly hefty way. And so people don't like that. People turn away from that. So who are the people who like Jesus? Well, maybe two main groups. The unlovely, the people that nobody else could be bothered with, and the poor, because he gave hope. There'll be others as well within that. And then the people who didn't like Jesus, well, the powerful weren't keen on him because he showed every sign of being a bit more powerful than they were or having more followers than they did. Mm-hmm. The religious leaders were really not keen. After all, before Jesus arrived on the scene, they'd been the important ones, hadn't they? They'd been the ones who taught people about God. And then Jesus rocks up and he's going, by the way, guys, you've got this totally wrong. You've got it on its head. You don't even know God. They were furious. They were so mad. They wanted rid of him. They wanted him out of the way. They wanted him dead. And so the important people weren't that keen on Jesus either. And it's almost like in the passage, people are saying, actually, Jesus deserves to die. And that's what some of the Jewish people felt. He deserves to die because of the things that he's been teaching. It says, we esteemed him not. There's real identification, isn't there? We don't think this Jesus is who he says he is. And because he's making these grand claims, he deserves to be cut off. He deserves to be put right out of the way. He deserves to die. And that's really the setup for the Easter story, isn't it? Jake, can you read us the next part of this passage?
He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows, yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. We, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way, and the Lord has laid the iniquity on us all.
So this next stanza, if you like, this next paragraph kind of starts with that idea that, oh, maybe Jesus did deserve it. You know, we considered him stricken and afflicted by God. He absolutely deserves it. And then it turns around, doesn't it? But he was pierced for our transgressions. Transgressions is just a fancy way of saying the things that we do wrong. He was crushed for our iniquities. Again, the things that we did wrong. The punishment that should have been ours, this passage is saying, was laid on Jesus. So he becomes this big sacrifice. It's not these wee sacrifices anymore that get chopped up by sin continuing to happen. It's pointing forward to Jesus being a big sacrifice that somehow covers all of sin and means that we can be friends with God again. And I think probably what's really important for us to grasp this morning is that each of us have a part to play in this story. We're not just onlookers. This story absolutely involves every single one of us. And we'll all have different ideas about what that looks like and what that means. So while you were doing that little activity, Gordon came around and gave you a wee swatch of colour cards like you get at DIY shops, which may have been where I lifted them from. If you haven't got one, find a wee group that does have one. There's several shades of grey, no jokes required, several shades of grey in there. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to look at each colour and I'd like you to think, if you were going to rank wrongdoings, okay, what sort of wrongdoings, sins, bad stuff would go in each of the colours? So if it's black, then it might be like be really, really bad stuff. And if it's light grey, then it might be kind of not such bad stuff, okay? I know this isn't really the way it works, okay? Theologically, we're cool with that. But just for the effects of the exercise, okay, let's think about what are really bad stuff and what are maybe not quite so bad stuff, okay? And if you can link it to some of the stuff you personally might have done, so much the better. Does that make sense? So have a look at the colours and see what you think. Full of money.
That's what you gave me with the pens in.
Okay, let's get some ideas then. So, thinking about the very darkest colours that you've got, the blacks and the greys with all their fancy names, okay? The really, really dark colours. What kind of sins or wrongdoings go on the really dark colours? Murder, yeah. What else? Punching, yeah. Physical violence, absolutely. What else? Stealing. Vandalism. Now, I'm just curious, do you think they're on the very darkest grey or do you think they're a little bit lighter grey? Do they go on the black? Which is worse, murder or stealing? Murder, probably. Okay, okay. Depends what you steal. Oh, good one. Okay, so let's look at the mid-tones. Something that's maybe sort of a charcoal grey. What sort of things might go on there? What do you think? Using bad language, okay, interesting. What else? Jealousy, okay, because jealousy can lead you to do some bad stuff. What else, Ronan?
Yeah, suicide.
Okay, fabulous. What else? That's kind of, it's a difficult one, Ronan. We'll talk about that, but it's quite a difficult one to do in this setting. What else? Well, again, that's kind of a grey area, isn't it? This is interesting. So Jake said being in the military. So maybe not just joining the army, but maybe some of the things that you might have to do in the course of duty. These are all interesting questions. Okay, let's look at the really lightest greys. Okay, the really light grey. What sort of sins might go on that? Bullying. Okay. What? Speeding. Oh, good one. None of us would ever do that, would we? Lying. Okay. Annoying. Yes, I can't. I don't know anyone who's annoying. Not paying for parking tickets. Okay, so these are kind of minor indiscretions, aren't they? Now, I'm not going to ask you to own up, but in your heart of hearts, I suspect that in the last week, some of us might have done some of those very light grey things. Maybe we went a wee bit too fast. Maybe we parked our car for just a little bit longer than the ticket said. Maybe we were super annoying to our brothers and sisters, perhaps. Yeah, maybe we thought things that we shouldn't have thought, or we said unkind words, or we had attitudes that maybe weren't the most helpful. You see, sometimes we make the mistake of thinking, oh, I'm not really a bad person because I don't murder people, I don't steal stuff, I don't, you know, I'm not that bad. But actually, if we're saying that all these things are shades of grey, they just don't match up with the white, do they? And the problem was that God is perfect. He's white. He's light, if you like. And whenever we get any bits of darkness inside of us, even if it's just speeding or just saying something a wee bit mean, we have those bits of darkness in us. And that's why Adam and Eve couldn't be near to God. Because what happens when you're in the pitch dark and you switch on a light? The darkness goes away, doesn't it? Light always destroys darkness, and that's the problem. This is the cosmic problem, if you like, is when we stand next to God in his light and purity with our bits of darkness, that gets destroyed and us along with it. So that's why we're separated. That is the problem. So all of us, the passage says, like sheep have gone astray, all of us has bits in us that are not the way that God would intend. And it doesn't matter whether that's a big bad sin or a wee tiny sin, it still keeps us separate from God. And that is the problem. Jake, could you untangle yourself from the chair, please, and come and read us stanza number 4?
He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, as a sheep before his shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And who can speak of his descendants? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was stricken. He was assigned with a grave with the wicked, and with the rich in his death, though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth.
takes us up to present day, if you like, in the story that we're in the time of the year that we're in. So we're at Palm Sunday. So Jesus is coming into Jerusalem. People seem pretty keen to see him. They're cheering, they're shouting. And within just a few days, the whole picture has entirely changed. People have turned against him. He's despised. He's rejected. He's not esteemed. And so he's betrayed by one of his closest friends. He's arrested. And then this happens. For sure if Jesus' death makes things right or not. When he's on the cross and he says, "It is finished," he doesn't mean I am finished. He means it is finished. The plan is finished. I've now reconciled. That means put back together God and people. He's saying, I've done the job that I said I would do. But you see, if he'd stayed dead, we couldn't be sure of that. The job would still have been done, actually. The work is finished at the cross. But as we know, next Sunday we celebrate Easter, when Jesus rises from the dead, and it's like him coming and saying, see, I told you. I said this is what has happened, and it is what has happened, and I'm proving that to you by coming back from death. So, actually, this last bit, kind of, can we bring the cross front and central? Because I don't think we can really see it here. Can you help me bring it down? Jake, I think it might be too big for you. Jake, help me. Actually, this last stanza of Isaiah's song here points forward to that hope, doesn't it? It points forward to that moment when Jesus comes back and says, see, I told you this. And it uses phrases like this. He will prolong his days. The will of the Lord will prosper in his hands. He will have the light of life. He will justify many. That means put them right with God. He will have a portion among the great. And then there's this key line, which I think kind of sums the whole thing up for us this morning. He made intercession for the transgressors. And it's this word intercession which is really important, because we think intercession is when we're really quiet in church and we put our hands together and we pray for stuff. And that is intercession. But actually, the sense of the word that's used in the original is this idea of reaching out to meet, to touch. And that's what Jesus does, isn't it? He reaches out from one side to the other so the two can be connected. He made intercession for the transgressors. So what does this mean to us? Well, it means absolutely everything to us this morning. The message of this song, this passage, is for anyone who's ever done anything wrong. And I'm guessing that's probably all of us in this room. And all we need to do is admit that, is to say, that's right, I have done stuff wrong, and I ask you, Jesus, to make it right, to connect me to my Heavenly Father again, so that I'm not separated from him, so that I have life with him forever. So this is massively, massively significant for us this morning. It's possibly the most important thing we need to know. What we're going to do now is we're going to have a pause for reflection. The band are going to come up and they're going to play a song. We can sing it along with them if you want to, or you can have a wee reflection moment. And as we listen to this song, we've got palm crosses at the front. And so in identification, that we're all part of this story, that this story is our story as well as the story of the people in the Bible, you can come and get a cross as we sing this song. And then as we go into our final song, you'll be able to wave them joyously.